You're listening to the Half and Half Podcast. Each week, we bring you a half his and half her point of view on important topics such as mental health, masculine and feminine dynamics, relationships, health, and more. So, grab yourself a cup of coffee and join us in the space between his and her perspectives, where we find middle ground. This is the Half and Half Podcast. And now, here's your hosts, Amanda and Nick.
Welcome to Half and Half.
Hi, welcome to Half and Half.
Yeah, this is Nick.
It's Amanda.
It's Amanda, and we always start out with what we're drinking.
We do. That's our thing. I have Intelligentsia.
From Crush Cakes.
Okay, I guess we're giving shout-outs to the places we get.
Yeah.
I didn't make this one myself, but I do have Intelligentsia decaf that I usually drink. Vanilla oat milk latte. And they kind of skimped me.
Yeah. But if Crush Cakes wants to sponsor us, that'd be cool.
Yeah, what will we get? Like free?
I don't know. We give like a promo code. That's what the other
podcast. We get a free Crush kale salad every day.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm drinking a red eye with oat milk and some raw sugar.
Oh, you put oat milk in? I thought you said it was black.
Well, I use your oat milk.
Oh, so you ordered black at the restaurant.
Yeah, so
like,
I look cool.
I like it black.
Yeah, and then you get 22 home year and olds are like, this guy's cool.
And then you got home and put my oat milk in it.
Donked it in oat milk, yeah.
All right, guys. We're happy to be back with you today. And we're going to be chatting about some important topics. I mean, we always talk about important topics, but I think today's is especially needed. We're going to talk about mental health. Nick, in your opinion, what do you classify as the definition?
Going right into it.
Well, what do you want to do?
No, that works.
Hold hands and kumbaya?
No.
We said we wanted to give them like short, straight.
That's true. Yeah. Okay. So what do I think of mental health? Like what do I think it is?
Yeah. What do you think the definition is?
I think mental health is anything that relates to someone's emotional, psychological, social, sometimes spiritual, like well-being, like in their head.
And
how it affects your day-to-day, your thoughts, your moods, your anxieties, your worries, your stress. It's kind of like all-encompassing, I believe, you know?
Yeah, and I think today we're going to focus a little bit on the Western perspective, which is probably something you have more experience with than I do.
A lot of experience with the Western side. Some with the Eastern side too, though.
Yeah.
I've tried everything.
Okay, so let's just talk about a straight fact of like, I think it's less of a stigma than it used to be, but why do you think it is a stigma?
Well, yeah, it's still very much a stigma. And
like what part of it? Having mental health issues? Like if you say, I've got mental health
issues. Yeah, people are like, oh, buck up, you know, get your stuff together. You know, a lot of times that is a response that you get.
Don't you think anxiety and depression are talked about way more than they used to be, though? And wouldn't you classify those things as mental health issues?
Of course, 100%.
Okay.
But I think depression specifically, I think someone who suffers from like clinical depression, they've had it for a long time. It's not attached to a specific event. You know, women get postpartum depression. That's like a specific event that causes it.
Sure, or somebody dies and you have,
Especially grief. Someone who on the outside looks like they got it all together. I think those kind of people a lot of times will get pushback from friends and family who just don't understand. And so that makes it really hard for them to come forward with it, to talk about it, to seek help. And I think especially in the male culture, I think it's sometimes a sign of weakness. Like I never talked to my guy friends. Like when I was feeling down, I was like, oh, well, I just got to compartmentalize. I got to do what I got to do. I'll be fine, you know, get through it. And it's changed now. For a long time, compartmentalize it because, you know, whenever I did broach the topic with someone, like kind of testing the waters, you know, I might get, you know, you got a great life, you know, you're fine. Stuff like that, which makes it really hard to connect with people and share that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and let's talk about guilt for a second. Like, you've got a great life.
Yep.
right? So there's like this perspective, and even yourself, I'm sure, were there times when you took a step back and like, what is my problem? I do
exactly
have a great life.
100%. Once you start being around people with mental health issues, say in like a treatment center or something like that, you run into some people with like really significant traumas, you know, abuse, rape, seeing someone die, all severely traumatic events. And when you kind of can't put a finger on your own issues, you know, next to them, yeah, you feel crap. It's like, yeah, what is going on? And you do feel a lot of guilt. Yeah, I mean, you come to terms with it over time that chemicals, upbringing, whatever it is that brought you to that place, it's real, you know?
Yeah. I want to just kind of share a perspective from a Christian standpoint, in the sense that I have not, you know, thankfully had major battles with any of this. I mean, I've had cycle issues with my menstrual cycle and definitely postpartum anxiety, but it's not been a driver of my life. But I do have some people I know who have had depression be a major driver of their life, and they are, you know, believers, and they have faith in God, and there's even more guilt there because there's this expectation for Christians specifically, like, you have a relationship with God, you have forgiveness, you have salvation. Mm-hmm. There's nothing for you to be you know, joyful about, and it's a spiritual problem, right? Mm-hmm. They make it solely a spiritual problem, and so much so that I've heard in sermons spoken from the stage, like, addressing anxiety and depression and just saying it should all just go away if you have faith.
Right.
And I just want to clarify that. Like, listen, I personally am a believer. I have that relationship. But there is a very fine line to be walked there. And like, people need to understand it's not just a spiritual issue. There is an actual physical component to it.
Mm-hmm.
And no amount of doing right or believing in the right things or seeking to have faith is going to fix some of that. And I'm not saying miracles aren't possible and people can't be healed and that different means can't be brought to make that happen. But I want to be a space here that people know that we understand there's a physical component. It's real. It's not in your head. It's not just you not being grateful or having enough faith.
Mm-hmm.
There's actual stuff going on. And I think that it can really affect people because they just feel overwhelming guilt compiled on top of, I have a good life.
Right.
There's also the spiritual component. Like, I'm not supposed to have this if I am in the sector.
Doing all these things.
Yeah. Right, right, right. Or have faith.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that it's a dangerous place, and people spend years not going on medication because they feel they shouldn't have to if they do A, B, and C,
right?
Whatever that is. So what were some of your reasons?
Well, that was my issue for a while. It was like, I didn't want to go on medication because of, you know, past issues with drugs. And it's like, I fought that for the longest time, and they scared me. It was like, I don't want to be on something I'm going to have to take forever. And then, you know, you hear all these horror stories on the internet. I think pharmaceuticals a lot of times get a bad rap on the web because not a lot of people go on, you know, Instagram or somewhere and say like, hey, this Effexor is working great for me. They only like talk about their, you know, the problems. And then like the herd comes in and, you know, everyone, you know, agrees. And there is a lot of that. There are a lot of medication doesn't work for some people. But what I found out is you have to like try, and you need to work with someone who can monitor you and really like, you know, figure it out, because everyone's different. Our brain chemistry is different. Our body's different. And you know, I don't think you should be scared of that. I'm not advocating go out there and pop pills, but it is a physical issue a lot of times, and that stuff can help. And so could, you know, the things like you work on with people, deficiencies, hormone issues, gut issues.
I think it's important for us to clarify here. Like, I think in both sides, we've both felt like neither one is doing a really great job.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think people think it's all or nothing. Either you do all natural.
Mm-hmm.
If you use any sort of medicine, you're a fraud.
Mm-hmm.
And you're taking the easy way out, or it's poison and toxic and whatever, you're not trying hard enough in the natural realm. And on the other side, on the pharmaceutical side, they look at any sort of natural approach like foolishness, you're wasting your time, it doesn't matter,
proven,
right? So I think both sides are wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And what would you say in your experience was the middle ground for you, finding help from both places?
Well, I was kind of forced to be in a position where I was working with people, and they really got down to know me. A lot of times when you visit a psychiatrist, it's 15 minutes, you tell them your story, and then they write your prescription, and it's like, you know, tell me if you have side effects in 2 weeks and we could try something different. Like, that doesn't work, you know?
Why doesn't that work, in your opinion? I was going to ask, what's the difference between a psychiatrist and, like, spending time with someone on a deeper level?
Well, a psychiatrist is a psychiatrist, but it just comes down to, like, you have to monitor how all of this stuff works. Like, take your business, for example. Like, if you just have women come to you, you do a hormone test or a hair and mineral test, and then you give them supplements, and you'd be like, hey, you know, come back in a month, tell me how this works. Like,
it doesn't work. Honestly, I don't even do that anymore, because so many people that I've done one-off testing, I never hear from them again. It doesn't work.
Because you have to monitor.
You have to address other things along with just those things.
Right. And that was the thing. It was medication monitoring and then, like, deep psychological work. I mean, and you can't, in my opinion, just do one or the other. A lot of times, I shouldn't say that, a lot of times talk therapy does work and it can get through that. But very rarely, I think, does medication on its own just work. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people expect that. It's like, oh, I'm depressed. Oh, I got anxiety. I'm going to go to the doctor. And they get something like Xanax, which will calm that anxiety, but open up a whole host of other problems, because what it does is it helps that physical anxiety, but it doesn't address any of the underlying stuff, and it messes with your levels and all that. So, but what was your question?
Well, just like in your experience, what has been the difference between just going to, because you did try going to mm-hmm. a psychiatrist, right?
Yeah.
And having them write you
one-offs.
Yeah,
it sucked. Yeah.
It didn't work well.
No.
And then the difference between, what was the solution for you?
Trying multiple things, and not just addressing the depression, but, like, looking at some other stuff. So, you know, my sleep was off. So it was like, okay, we got to fix that. That was huge. I was sleeping like 4 hours a night and I was going crazy. So it was like, we're going to look at your sleep. We're going to also look at your mood, which was a big one, because my moods were really up and down. And I got diagnosed bipolar 2, which was kind of huge. I'd never gotten a diagnosis like that before. And I think part of that reason is when I was seeing other doctors and psychiatrists, I was told I present very well. Like, I wasn't going to see them during, like, really lows or really highs. It was always just like, something's off, like, something's really off. And then they'd give me some medication and I'd go home. And then, like, a week later, I'd hit, like, a crazy dip. And so with the doctors that worked with me, when it finally worked, they were monitoring me, like, every 3 days I saw them. And so they could see, like, how are you feeling? Are you getting side effects? How's your sleep? How's your mood? You exercising? You getting enough, you know, nutrients? And it was a slow process. They didn't just start me on a high dose. They started me very slow and they titrated me up.
Didn't your diagnosis not come in until you would been working with a specific individual for, like, over 60 days?
Yeah, it was about a month and a half. She just noticed, like, you know, like, what's going on. I hit a really big low in there after being, like, really good for a while, for a few weeks. You know, she started asking, like, has this happened before? I said, yeah, you know, and I always just attributed to, like, yeah, just cycles, you know, mm-hmm. which partially I think is true.
Yeah.
But my downs were, like, where I was, like, suicidal and stuff. Like, I was really, like, down. And then I would also get highs where I'd want to work, I'd want to go do stuff, like, explore, adventure, spend a lot of money, like, do all of those things. And, you know, she said, maybe we shouldn't look at this as depression. Maybe we should look at this as, like, a bipolarity issue.
Which can be...
And that was a game changer.
Yeah. Why was it a game changer? Because some people could think... I know people who've been diagnosed with that, and it's this scary, daunting thing that they... It's shameful. Like...
Yeah. And I want to say something about bipolar, too, because that term gets thrown around so much.
Yeah.
And it's like... Bipolarity is a physical thing. Like, it's a physical issue with your neurotransmitters, with your norepinephrine, and they actually cycle. And it's not just like, oh, I'm going crazy today. Like, I'm feeling bipolar, or, like, you know, just, you know, when it gets thrown around like that.
Yeah,
like,
people
it's
will
such
accuse
a,
people of being it. They think it just means a manic person who's just, like, off the rails.
And it's not. And, like, with bipolarity, what's what's scary about it is they say, oh man, I knew these stats, I kind of forgot them, but you're like 10 times more likely to commit suicide if you're undiagnosed bipolar, especially if you're male, and you're also 10 times more likely to have substance abuse problems because they treat the depression, but that could actually sometimes be worse because it throws off your moods even more.
You mean the medication they give you for that?
If they just give you give you like an SSRI or something like that, it could throw stuff off even more. Like you need something that levels you out. So what it does is there's your peaks and your lows, and it kind of brings everything to a baseline. Uh-huh. But yeah, there's definitely a big stigma with that. I was looking at you like right before I said what I was diagnosed. I was like, should I say this? And because I still have, you know, issues sometimes because it's. And I shouldn't, but
well, here's the deal.
It's a scary thing to put out there.
Absolutely. And there's judgment in things around it. And, you know, I think it's important, I think, especially for someone like you, there's other people like you who are listening in the sense that I think it took so long for somebody to really find the root, like you said, because you had major coping mechanisms. Mm-hmm. You're a very capable person from the outside. Nobody really knew anything was wrong, you know, because you hit it well. And as a male, you felt like you had to, right? And as a man, you felt your need to show up, lead, provide, get the job done type of deal.
So and I did do that.
And you did. Yeah. That's the thing is you did. It wasn't like... You know, bipolar equals just this person who can't handle, you know, but people in that category, would you say are more of a risk because they're not talking about it with anybody? Nobody knows. They are probably misdiagnosed. And then, you know, there's this spiral, would you say, of confusion as well, because they don't understand themselves what the problem is because.
Yeah, definitely more at risk. In terms of the diagnosis, I think the biggest misdiagnosis of bipolar is depression because, like, looking back, I loved my highs. Like, they were fun. Sure. And people typically don't go to a psychiatrist or a doctor if they're feeling elated. I mean, I'm not talking bipolar one. Bipolar one is completely different, and it's, like, non-functioning highs.
Yeah.
But they get diagnosed depressed, clinical depression, and then they'll get medication for that, and then they'll go out and
it's the wrong fit
and then they get even more like down on themselves, like shh, I'm sore,
it's okay.
That like this isn't working, like what's going on, like what's wrong with me.
You can say shit. It was
okay. I don't know, do we want to get the
shit,
explicit
this isn't
label
working.
yeah shit, this
oh
sucks.
Wait, if we say shit, will we get an explicit label?
I don't know. That's okay.
I think that works okay.
Yeah, that one's fine. They say it on like USA and stuff and television.
Yeah.
Like after 10.
after 10. After only 10. Listen to this after 10, folks.
This is half and half after dark. Yeah. I think those kind of people are very much at risk, and especially the ones that try and power through it. I tried to power through it for about 15 years.
just a smidge.
Yeah.
Just a smidge amount of time.
And I was self-medicating with a lot of different things. And after I did some research on, you know, bipolar and stuff, and I looked at all the classic coping mechanisms that people use, I mean, a lot more likely to abuse stimulants, a lot more likely to abuse alcohol, you know, stimulants for the lows, alcohol for the highs. Like, you know, I was essentially trying to do what this medication that I got on ended up doing.
Interesting.
A hell of a lot better.
To stabilize it.
To stabilize,
wow,
yeah.
That's fascinating.
And, I mean, you've seen, you know, I chart my moods and stuff. Like, it's been like 2 months and I've like, haven't really had any down days, which has been awesome.
Yeah. So hold on. Let's just rewind for a second.
I feel like you asked me a question and I just go off on these tangents.
It's okay. It's important, I think, for people to hear what you're saying. The fact that people who have some of these issues, they're not going to their psychiatrist that they go to for their 15-minute appointment on the highs.
Mm-hmm.
They're only going on the lows. And on the lows, it very much presents in the case
depression.
Of depression. So they're given a medication with no research on this person's body, mm-hmm. looking at any testing, any genetic information, nothing, given this medication, and then told to like report in. And then so this person gets this medication. They have all this hope that this is going to be their answer. They go, it actually exasperates the problem.
Hair falls out or something.
And not only that, suicide tendencies for some people with side effects. Mm-hmm. And then they feel even more helpless because nothing's working. I'm broken. Nothing's working for me.
100%.
Okay. So that's really important to understand. So there's a difference between the medication that was finally prescribed to you when you were given a proper diagnosis and after.
I mean, and I think that's the biggest thing. I think.
And what kind is it? Is it?
The kind I'm taking?
Yeah.
Lamictal.
No. Not the brand name. What kind of, is it NSRI? What is it called?
I'm taking Lamictal and an SSRI. SNRI.
Sorry, that's the one I want to know. Is it SNRI?
Yeah.
And that.
Serotonin, norepinephrine, reuptake inhibitor. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's interesting because it's different than an SSRIs actually were not the right fit for you.
No, they were terrible.
So that is such an important thing to hear for everybody listening, that if something isn't working for you, you need to ask more questions. You need to be your best health advocate, because unless you're in one of these situations, which not everybody gets the opportunity to go to a place that has like focused care for 60 days to really examine you, you're dealing with a one-off meeting and you've got to find an answer for yourself,
and this is something that someone told me in there, is when you go to a psychiatrist, you're paying for an hour. Like, your $200, that pays for an hour. So get your money's worth, and that's where you present your history, you ask questions, you know, because there is no test for this kind of stuff. It's not like they're going to run a test and be like, oh, you have this. Like, it's figured out, you know, anecdotally, which is scary, because you need to be able to articulate that and really, but a good doctor can pull that out of you. They, you know, they know the signs. And so here's
another tip. If your doctor isn't doing these things,
get a new
switch
one.
Doctors. Yeah, go to somebody else.
Like, that's just so expensive, that don't settle for someone who's just going to write you scripts. That's crazy.
Right. Okay. So anybody listening who's having issues, who SSRIs aren't seeming to work for, there's probably a reason. You should look into something different. Find out whether you have something else going on that can be a bigger root of the problem, not just depression, and address it from that level.
I also want to throw one other thing, because I was guilty of this. Don't diagnose yourself, because along the lines of a psychiatrist taking anecdotal evidence from you, I have found in the past when I've, you know, seen some and I've thought I had something just doing research on the internet.
You mean Google?
Google, WebMD, we have all this knowledge at our hands, and it can be very dangerous. And I'm not saying go do research, but don't go in there with like, I think I have this, because again, like, a lot of times medication is somewhat of a guessing game in terms of what works for you. And I don't know, they're professionals, let them do their job.
Okay. So there's two sides to that coin. One, if you feel like you're not getting the answers you need, it's not working, find another doctor.
Right.
But on the other hand, don't think you know better than everybody. So what was it for you that really, you know, because you probably had an air about you going into some of the psychiatrists you worked with for many years saying, they're dumb. This is not what I have.
Right.
And what got you to the point of respecting the person that you were working with that you trusted?
Sure. Can I start with why I thought they were dumb?
Sure.
Well, no. So I don't know if I've talked about this yet. Yeah. So I had an issue with pills. And when I was in LA, I used to quote unquote doctor shop. And I prided myself on being able to manipulate doctors and get exactly what I wanted. And because I was able to do that, I was like, oh, these guys don't know shit, you know? Like, and so I had this air about me where I was like, they can't figure it out, you know? And it wasn't until I reached kind of a rock bottom and I went in and I was like, just go with the process. Just trust the process. Be 100% honest. I mean, that was huge. Like, being 100% honest.
So you had to let your guard down there. You had to be
100%.
Humble.
I needed to trust this person with my life.
Yeah.
And I got a great doctor. I mean, she sat with me the first time for an hour, like, asked me everything, stuff that wasn't even related to, that didn't even seem to be related to mental health, but it was just trying to get a full picture of everything. And then asked me what I've tried before, asked me about family history. A lot of times, medications work well within the family. In my case, they didn't, but, you know, she was trying to pry those questions out. And yeah, I was just honest, and I was willing to trust it and not think this is a scam, this stuff doesn't work, this is throwing crap against the wall.
Yeah.
And it definitely took time. It wasn't like I got my medication, and then all of a sudden everything was better.
No.
There were frequent checkups. There were dosage changes. You know, I did have side effects at first. You remember that. But then, like, once everything was kind of working, it was working.
Yeah. I mean, I just think it's amazing firsthand to have watched a situation with you.
Because you were a skeptic, huh? Well, a little bit.
Listen, I have not heard... I saw all the bad things that were happening from mm-hmm. you trying different medications that weren't working for you. Right. And part of that was they should have tested you genetically too to find out some stuff that there is a genetic test that you can do to find out which medications are more beneficial for you than others. But either way, there wasn't a lot of examining going on. It was just like guessing.
Right.
And yeah, I wasn't a fan of that. Mm-hmm. But I will say anybody who's out there listening, whose life is drastically being affected by this, number one is your safety and your mental health and your ability to show up for your life. And if you need medication to do that, then by all means, do it, because mm-hmm. it really matters. And obviously, find someone who's going to work with you, who's going to really get to the root issue. But like, you are so stable and like happy and secure. It's like amazing to watch. And and literally, like,
and you're not a zombie.
You're not this like zombie drugged up person or anything like that. Honestly, you just feel normal. You feel normal. And you know what? That's amazing. And mm-hmm. and to think that for so long you subconsciously and consciously were trying to solve that yourself by the things you did. Think of all the heartbreak it caused you. Yeah. And then to think about now being on something that's doing that for your body, that you don't feel that drive to do that anymore or to solve the problem. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And people need to know that's an option and it's viable. There's no shame in it. Mm-mm. There's nothing wrong in it, and it can really change your life.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important for people to hear. And anybody who's spiritual, who's listening, it doesn't make you less of like a spiritual person. You actually...
I'm a believer, yeah.
You actually came to that through mm-hmm. this experience.
And, yeah, it opened my eyes, yeah.
Which is incredible to think mm-hmm. about. Like, it's not going to take any of that away from that being a factor of your life.
Yeah. Energy's better. Like, everything just feels better. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk for a minute about the internal work that you did as well. Okay, so I'm a big fan in my practice of what I offer. There's two sides to the coin. There's the physiological mm-hmm. and there's the emotional. Let's talk about the work that you did there and how it contributes to your mental health. And, you know, we don't have to get into the root of your personal story or anything if you don't mm-hmm. want to. Let's just talk about the work that you did there and how that side matters.
Yeah. So there's a theory which I really like, that a lot of the physical effects of mental health in the brain stems from stress. Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking about stress like work is going bad, but a physical traumatic stress. And that could be anything. That could be, again, rape, having a child die, living in a broken household, having too much pressure put on you. Like, all of these things can have a stressful effect on the body and can cause things. And those kind of things can be peeled back, I believe, in therapy and really talked about and really addressed. And that was a lot of the work that I did. We looked at kind of the major traumatic events in my life, what led up to them, how did they make me feel, kind of what were the consequences of that, and really peeled it back to a pretty young age and you know, broke down just everything. It kind of just changed the way I looked at things. It made me accept, you know, my diagnosis and, like, you know, how I got to where I was. Remove the shame, remove the guilt, remove the need to lie about things. You know, being able to be okay being down and you know, not having it all put together. And yeah, I mean, that's a process. And that I was very, very lucky to be in a place that allowed me to do that for 90 days. Sometimes that's not accessible to everyone.
Yeah. Well, even in quote unquote, like, rehab facilities, that's not always a focus at all. And they're just trying to solve that surface issue of, like, whatever it is.
Whatever. Usually it's, they look at whatever the latest trauma is
and
unpack that. And I think a good...
Versus a wiring that's been there for a long
time. Yeah. Really trace it back and look at each thing that led you to what made you use drugs. Okay, well, let's look at what happened before that. You know, what, you know, with me, it was getting in trouble with the law. Like, what made you do that? And then, like, really pulled it back and back and back. Why are you laughing? I said that. I was young. But Yeah, I mean, I was very, very lucky. I got placed with an amazing therapist. Yeah, I'll be honest. I think without the therapy, I probably would have been at 75% with the medication.
Sure.
But I think in terms of like my confidence and feeling good and really like accepting everything, the therapy, you know, pushed it over the line.
I remember when we were just friends, and I think you used to have trouble looking yourself in the eye.
Yeah, I couldn't look at myself in the mirror.
Yeah, like just to think of like how much that has changed for you and what a drastically different person you are. And like I think, you know, and not to say everything goes back to childhood, but in some cases these expectations that we've been wired with of needing to perform, needing to produce, it can lead us to trying to find solutions so that mm-hmm. we can continue to operate at that level. Because somewhere, you know, in our subconscious, it's if we don't do this, we don't get love.
Yep.
That's like the driving factor of survival, right? For our bodies. So then we find coping mm-hmm. mechanisms still to get there.
I heard this like kind of amazing stat the other day. I'm taking like substance abuse classes, and this came up in one of the lectures, and it when I was talking about stress earlier, like stress on the body kind of triggering mental health issues, sometimes it's not even a stress that you do. It can actually happen. So the study looked at women who were pregnant and had a traumatic stress to them while they were pregnant, and that actually passed down to the baby.
Yeah.
And there's stats that say like women who experience a stress with a baby in utero, like that baby is more likely to have anxiety, mm-hmm. ADHD, rage issues, behavioral issues. And I mean, that's scary because
that's hard.
18 years down the road when that, you know, man is now having issues, like, how do you peel that back?
I know that that is hard. And it's like, you know, you can't affect some stuff that happens in life. Like you get in a car accident when you're pregnant, or
yeah.
your father dies,
yeah.
or something happens trauma wise, or, you know, even like having to move in the middle of your pregnancy, or mm-hmm. all these things can happen and they can contribute. Definitely, I think it's seen like mothers who have anxiety too,
yeah.
and just have that disposition, have more of that kind of thing happen, you know,
yeah.
with their children as well. No shame anywhere. It's just
no.
a fact of like how it passes down.
Yeah.
That's
and
crazy.
there was one where a woman was fired from her job,
mm-hmm.
and that, I mean, that's crazy. Like that,
right,
that
now she's in fear of
she's stressed,
mode.
Yeah, money of finances.
Yeah, totally. Because if you think about it, way back in the day, a pregnant woman was just hanging around the camp.
Yeah.
She was like, you know, she was chilling with her
with all
people,
the other pregnant women.
And they were seriously though, they were in community. She was not out there in a corporate job
yeah.
getting fired. Like that
yeah.
wasn't happening. And so just think about the way our bodies were designed to be. Our bodies were not meant to live this modern life
no.
that we're living. I was just talking about that the other day with motherhood and modern motherhood and how it's two different sides of your brain, literally,
mm-hmm.
and how much stress it causes. So, yeah, that's crazy to think about. So, what would be your advice to anybody listening who is struggling? They feel shame about it. They don't know where to go, what to get answers. Like, what would you say?
So, first off, don't feel shame. 1 in 5 people have mental health issues. I think it's 1 in 7 have serious, like, enough mental issues to be debilitating. That 1 in 5 number is slowly moving towards 1 in 4. So look around the room, like other people are going through it. Everyone's just really good at compartmentalizing.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
Try and build a good support system locally. In the ideal world, like I'd say go, you know, really do intensive work on yourself. That's not realistic for everyone,
yeah.
whether it's money or whether it's being able to take off work
sure.
or kids or stuff like that. Trust professionals. Find a good one. Don't stop at the first. Don't get discouraged. That's the other thing. If you try something that doesn't work, keep trying. It's your body. It's your life. Until you find something that works. There's support systems out there, groups and stuff. A lot of times just being around people that are going through the same stuff just helps. It normalizes it. It makes you feel better.
Yeah.
You know, in the recovery world, there's AA, NA. I personally don't vibe with that, but it helps so many people just being around it and being able to talk about it because it's normal to them and they need an outlet.
Yeah. Okay. So anybody who's listening who does not have mental health issues.
Yeah. You're
okay.
awesome.
No, I was going to say like judging for one, stop judging and thinking you understand it, or even looking at people with addiction issues and being like, what slobs, you know, like these people, they are coping, trying to cope with 100%. A deeper underlying issue. And none of us are above any of that stuff that's happened. And some of us just have different ways. Like, listen, the woman who has a food addiction, who's in her cupboard, shoving her face full of cookies and like hiding it, she's doing the exact same thing as someone else. It's just less damaging to the outside world, right? It's not as looked at as harmful as shooting up or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, no one ever dreamed of growing up to be a heroin addict. Right. Like, it's not like something people aspire to do. It's the result of trying to quell a pain of some sort, whether it's mental, whether it's physical. That's huge. So I like that.
And I would say to everybody who's listening that has children, no, we can't go back and undo what happened in utero, you know, whether there was any sort of stressor or whatever. But what we can do is provide an opportunity for our children not to have to hide and to shove their emotions down and shame and make them into performers. We can give them an opportunity to express. And it doesn't mean letting them get away with things, but the more we open the conversation with our children from a young age of letting them talk about their feelings, lower the expectations of perfection or performing on them, the more they're going to feel the ability to talk about something that's wrong later down the road when they're teenagers. Yeah. And I think that starts when they're young. And I think that's a huge way that people can start changing this dynamic in the world, is understanding the role that plays in young children and setting them up. You know, we can't control circumstances in every case, but we can do our best to sort of help children make it through those circumstances.
I mean, education matters, like for parents, for kids, like the more people like are aware of this stuff and know about it, like the easier those conversations are. And you could start looking out for the signs.
What are your favorite resources for people, like books, podcasts, anything? We can put them in the show notes, but if you could think of anything after. I love The Body Keeps Score.
Yeah.
It's a great book.
I liked Attached, where you look at attachment styles. That was big. I mean, I read a lot of like recovery memoirs, I'll call them, just in terms of like, you know, these are high functioning people that had addiction issues, but they all stemmed from mental health. So I like to kind of look at that and, you know, people telling their stories, and you kind of see how it, you know, starts from either a young age or early adulthood and kind of grows into this beast that, podcast. I like, I think it's called the Hardcore Self-Help Podcast with a guy named Robert Duff. He's actually up in Ojai. Like, I listen to his stuff a lot. He's really good. Let's see.
We can add some into the show and give. And
I love hearing Dr. Drew's opinion on his addiction medicine. He approaches it from what I think is the right approach, as more of a, you know, he deals with both addiction and mental health, but he looks at them both as a mental health issue, as a disease. And I think he's real sharp.
Cool. Well, thanks for sharing.
Yeah.
And if anybody's interested in reaching out to Nick to ask questions or get support, we'll provide a way for you to be able to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And next week, we're going to talk about things from my perspective, you know, half and half, from the natural world of medicine, in the sense of anxiety and depression, the role that certain things can play in that, and just kind of share that side of the coin as well.
Very cool.
Yeah.
I like this one.
This is good.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Bye, guys.
We're going to wrap it up.
Wrapping it up.